and Chris, and this is my Writing Table podcast, where we talk to authors and other creatives about the writing world and what it takes to create the books that we love to read. Ready? Pull up a chair and let's begin. L.R. Jones is a pseudonym for New York Times and USA Today bestselling author Lisa Renee Jones, whose dark, edgy fiction includes the highly acclaimed novels The Poet, A Perfect Lie, and the Lila Love series. Prior to publishing, Lisa owned a multi-state staffing agency recognized by the Austin Business Journal. Lisa was listed as number 7 in Entrepreneur Magazine's list of growing women-owned businesses. She lives in Colorado with her husband, a cat who always has something to say, and a golden retriever who's afraid of her own bark. Her latest novel is The Wedding Party. Welcome, Lisa.
Hi, nice to be here.
I will be talking to you as Lisa in this genre. Your books are titled under L.R. Jones. Tell me a little bit about that.
When I first started writing thrillers, I did write them as Lisa Renee Jones. Like I have The Poet and I have another crime series. It's tricky because I write romance under Lisa Renee Jones. And even though I write, all of my stuff has a thriller element to it. Mm-hmm. It's confusing to people if they see Lisa Renee Jones and they see all these romances. And also, I had an issue. The Poet, which is about a serial killer who sticks poems in the victim's mouth, got put in romance by most of the bookstores. And
oh,
I was
no.
I even went in and argued with some of the Barnes & Noble. I'm like, there is no romance. It will confuse my readers. They were like, but you're romance. I'm like, no, this is not romance. So that's how we kind of got to where L.R. Jones needed to exist, because there needed to be a firm distinction between the two, that no, there is absolutely no romance in L.R. Jones, other than what you might see in any other thriller if there's a relationship, but you also right. wonder if that person's about to kill the other person, that kind of thing. Thrillers are a little different. Are they marry him? Are they going to kill him?
Our listeners probably know the difference between romance and thrillers. I want to say civilians, people that are not writers, say, what's the difference between suspense and a thriller? Can you help us with that?
Yeah, that's kind of tricky. I mean, is it romantic suspense? Like I host Readers Take Denver, which is a huge book convention in Denver. And, you know, we have a lot of genres involved there. And when you look at it, there's cozy mystery. What's a cozy mystery? What is a mystery? You know, like cozy is usually like a small town, small, you know, it's just this cute little cozy mystery. So I think, you know, even when I talk to my thriller authors that are attending, there's thriller or no, I'm espionage. So, I mean, I think it's just a lot of little subgenres within. Like, for instance, the book that we're talking about, The Wedding Party, is really one part domestic thriller and one part crime thriller. Why? Because there is a detective in there solving things, but she didn't mean to be a detective in this book. She just happened upon it. And you're in the point of view also of this character who may or may not be a killer, who she gets wrapped up, you know, trying to help solve the crime that's affected her life. The Wedding Party is in two points of view. There is a fiance who is going for her bachelor party. They're having a combo party at Stephen King's, where he wrote The Shining.
Estes Park. Yeah. So when you're talking domestic suspense, let's just say domestic suspense. So the main character would be whom?
It's usually an everyday person. They seem like an average person, but they end up involved in something they don't expect to be. Like the girl on the train would be a domestic suspense. You know, she's on the train, she sees something, you know, that kind of thing. Even Gone Girl, although I think it kind of borderlines on a crime.
Domestic thriller. Yeah. Psychological thriller.
Psychological. Yeah, they actually, it's even confusing for me because, you know, we talk to your editor, oh, that's a psychological thriller. That's a domestic thriller. It's a very fine line between those two. Whereas a crime procedural novel is going to be like The Poet, which was detective solving a crime. There's a serial killer. So, you know, that's very procedural. Well, you know, was there DNA? Was there not DNA? With a domestic or psychological thriller, you're not going to get all that DNA stuff. Was evidence bagged? None of that's a part of it.
Those who are not writers, the reason these things are important is because this is where you're going to find these novels is in the domestic suspense, the cozy mystery section. And so you may not realize that's the way they're shelved, but that's why the distinction's important. And if you like reading it, it doesn't really matter what you call it. We don't care.
That's true. But it is easier to find the things that you
right.
if you kind of know how they're categorized. I mean, I love domestic and psychological thrillers so much. And that's going to be like Lisa Jewell. I love Lisa Jewell. That would be Stars Would Fall. So those are fun. Whereas, you know, you've got Karen Slaughter, or Lisa Gardner, who probably are going to lean more towards crime in most cases. I don't get to do it very often anymore, but I love to go to the bookstore and get lost in those sections and just find those books.
What about writing in two genres? Because you still write romance. How do you balance that?
My romances are almost all driven by some sort of suspense element as well. So that helps, but there's a difference. I mean, when you're writing a romantic suspense, then 50% of your plot's driven by, you know, is a romance on the pages. When you sit down and you write a thriller, that's not a factor. You are just thinking about the thriller aspect, setting the reader up to not know what's going to happen, that kind of thing.
You probably don't have poems in the dead person's mouth. That's right. I'm guessing.
Right. Exactly. You know, it's funny, when I sat down to write The Poet, I had not written a thriller in, gosh, about a year. And I thought, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? I've got to change my way of thinking. And then 100,000 words later, my editor was like, wow, that's a long book, Lisa. I'm like, I know. And you're always worried about getting out of the frame of mind of having the romance on the pages. I had no problem. And I just got so into the mystery itself and the killer's mind and all of those things that all replaced any of that romance that would have been in there in the romantic suspense. So,
speaking of thrillers, your latest is called The Wedding Party. Tell us about it.
I love this story because it's set kind of like a White Lotus, if you've watched White Lotus or Agatha Christie, where the location is kind of an identity of its own. Like, you always feel in White Lotus that the island itself, it's not haunted, but it just seems to have this curse to it, things that happen. And that's how I looked at the setting. So it is the Stanley Hotel where Stephen King wrote The Shining. It was a lot of fun to have that setting because basically the bride and groom in this story, one of the main voices in the story is the bride, has their bachelorette party at the Stanley Hotel. But right before, you know, they're living together, he gets this box with a red ribbon. And when he gets it, he kind of freaks out and he acts really secretive, goes to his office, shuts the door. And of course, you think in your mind, he's cheating. There's something else going on, which is, of course, what I want everybody to believe. And I won't say if that's true or not. and so the bride to be gets pretty obsessive about this. You know, is there something going on? And he assures her that it's just some stupid gift that one of the groomsmen did that would piss her off. And so he did not want her to know about it because he doesn't want her to dislike this guy. They're off to their party. And meanwhile, this FBI agent, the second voice in the story, she's just trying to get away from this big press thing that went bad for a case that she had. Friend of hers is going to this party at the Stanley. And she says, just come with me. I don't want to be alone. And you need to be away from the press. So she goes. And it's supposed to be an escape for her, just like it's supposed to be this amazing event for the bride to be. But then somebody dies. And it's kind of a slow burn, though. It's like White Lotus, where you see all these things happening and you don't know where it's going. You know, this box is here. You know, this box has something to do with it. You know that someone is involved with whatever is going on with this box at this with the wedding party. And then somebody's dead. And then, of course, our character, who's the FBI agent, gets drawn into it because she's like, oh my God, can I not escape for just a moment? The next thing you know, she's standing over a dead body trying to figure out what's going on. And the bride is naked and in the attic of the hotel with blood covering her. So did she do it or not? Or did she just freak out when she found him? So that's the story. It was a lot of fun. Like I said, because the hotel is supposed to be haunted, and I do believe it is. I know I was there for a book signing, and I walked in the main hotel, and one of my author friends was like, oh my God, you just missed it. Her hair went flying up in the air when she came down the stairs. And so I put a lot of references to those things. There's a room that is supposed to have a cowboy that stands at the end of the bed while you sleep, and you see him, and it's, yeah.
Oh, wow.
I know. Another one that does not like when couples are in bed together, like, and he does strange things because of it. I'm like, do not put me in that room. We took our cat and they would not let us stay in the main hotel because of the hauntings. The animals do not do well in the main hotel because...
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just thought that setting was fun, even though the story doesn't have any paranormal elements. It was just fun to have that extra creep factor around the story itself. So,
It makes for another character in the book.
Yeah. Yeah. I really felt like the hotel itself became a character in the book. So
you've published as an indie author and you've also gone the traditional route. So what was the progression?
So I started out writing category romance, getting nowhere. Then I became the queen of being in everybody else's anthologies. And then frustrated, I started indie publishing. And next thing I knew, I was on the New York Times 13 times in a row. And I had just done really well. So I had this series that I knew was special. It was a romantic thriller. I would probably call it more erotic thriller. And I knew it was special. And my agent was like, I don't think it's going to sell. And then I went to one of my publishers, one of the New York publishers, and they offered me $10,000. And I laughed. I'm like, I'm making more than that in a week right now, indie. I'm not going to take that. Yeah. And I remember it being surreal. So I sent it to this new agent and she went, this is so good. Can I take it out to publishers? I'm like, no, I'm not taking $10,000. She said, no, I'm going to take it to the big wigs. And so it went to auction for six figures. It went to Starz, but it's been all over. Wow. Starz, Paramount, all over. It's been like my roller coaster ride in Hollywood because champagne and tears, because I have literally been to the point they called me and said, we're going into production tomorrow, and had the studio head fired the next day. Like, I've been through so much with that series. But one thing I will say is New York is an environment where what goes up must go down. Has cycles. And so I stay hybrid because I feel like there's security in that. You can do really great and not do great in both ways, formats of publishing. And that's one of the things when I started Readers Take Denver, it was really to help our charity to help sick animals. But I also felt like authors didn't have a place to go to talk about things like this. So we have most of the big publishers attending, a lot of agents, editors, lawyers, you know, people that are industry people who help with things like Kickstarters, things like that. And, you know, what is the best way to have a long career? Like I tell people, you know, I've been around a long time. Some of my idols aren't around anymore. This business can be tough. It didn't used to be that way. I mean, many of us, me included, loved it back when it was just, you know, a certain way. And it seemed like that way was great. Although when I say that, I might not have made it like I did if it weren't for indie existing. But even indie has transformed. You have to treat writing like a business, forever change, and find a way to make sure that if one part of the market suffers, you don't suffer, you know, because you've got another part of the market, or, you know, whether it be indie, whether it be traditional, whether it be a genre, whether it be print, whether, you know, that kind of thing, audio. Yeah. I mean, authors attending who are massive in audio, but not at all in ebook. Like, I have one author, amazing fantasy author, 30,000 reviews on every audiobook he releases, but not like that for his other stuff. So there's all kinds of ways to be successful. So that's how I look at the differences, is how can I be diverse, not all my eggs in one basket.
Did I just hear a golden retriever in the background?
Oh my God, how did you know that's a golden retriever?
Well, I saw that you have a golden retriever, and we've had three. Last one passed away in 18, and my husband won't let me get another. He wants to choose his own and he wants to train it. The kids and I have got to pick the last three. Yellow golden or red golden?
We have two. We have one red and one yellow, and they're the best.
They are the best.
Oh my God. They're the sweetest, wonderful. So we had lost our cat in 18, and she was obsessed with golden retrievers. We don't know why. She just was. In fact,
she knows. She knows their hearts are golden.
Yeah. And we looked at it like one of her wish lists, and one of the neighbors let her play with the golden, and she like just loved him. So we fostered for about a year, and then we went and we fostered goldens, some abused goldens, which was hard. And then so we got our oldest, Mika, and she like healed our hearts. I mean, they are just special, special animals. I don't even look at them as animals. They're just our daughters.
Part of your family.
Oh gosh, they are. We would do anything for them. And that's what made us start the charity, was it cost us a lot of money when Julie, that was our cat, she had cancer. But writing had been good to me, so we were able to handle it. But a lot of families can't. So we really specialize in helping families that can't help their animals, but love them very much. We've had some amazing stories. I mean, helped military support dogs, that kind of thing. And that's the hard part about it, is I cry the tears of loss, you know, and pain and fear with them that are still raw to us. And I know, you know, it's a special thing to be able to help animals. So this year, we think we'll make maybe three times as much money to help sick animals as we did last year.
I love that you're using a writing and book convention to help animals. If you're a writer, we're used to being stuck at home, but those animals, without them, It would be really sad. Very, very sad. You got to have your animals to help you write.
Yeah, it's true. I definitely have animals show up in my books a lot because they're special, you know.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your conference convention. When is it? Where is it? And can they just go to your website and get information?
This year's been sold out for about 10 months, April 18th.
Wow, awesome.
We do have Mark Greeny coming, and his Netflix is allowing us to show The Gray Man. So we did open some day passes for that, but only for the Thriller Day. So on our website, can get Thriller Day tickets. 2025 tickets are open. We're already more than 50% sold out for 25. And that is February 6th through 9th and 25. So if anybody wants to go to 25, now's a good time to get tickets. We sold out in 2 months last year. And this year we opened tickets 2 weeks ago.
So there'd be a lot of animals you get to help and writers.
Yes. Well, you know, I look at it like my books, I have dedications to some of my animals. You know, I know so many writers who their writing companion is their furry child. Yeah. So I felt like, you know, who better to help support animals. And I know some of our authors are just passionate about it, and it's why they're so dedicated to our event. And it's only our second year, but had 1,000 people year one, we'll have 3,500 year two. So
nice.
Yeah.
Where's it hosted?
Gaylord Rockies. And we're there through at least 27s.
After we lost our Golden, we still had our Great Dane. And I'm telling you, she got me through writing my first two books, and she was there with me every day. I would get up and go to one room, and she would old and arthritic and in such bad shape, but she would still get up and follow me from room to room. 160 pounds. Sophie, my daughter called her Big Booty Judy.
Oh, I love it. Our long-term pet sitter always has Great Danes. I just love her Great Dane stories, and they're just big, lovable.
They are. They're heartbreaking though. They don't live long enough.
We were just talking yesterday about why do they have such short lives?
They're
so much better than we are as humans. I mean, unconditional love, no judgment. They don't care if you screwed something up, if you gained 5 pounds, if they don't care about anything, they just love you. And that's special because humans are not that way. Even when we try to be, we're not. We're flawed. I feel for you. And that's exactly why this event, you know, exists. And we have some of the pet parents coming to the event that we've helped. So I think that's a lot of fun too. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we have a rescue little tweenie. And then because he's a rescue and he had a lot of emotional issues, I wanted to get him a friend, but I didn't want to get him another rescue. He needed somebody who didn't know there was any bad in the world.
That's
so now
point.
He has a little asshole brother, Teddy. My son told me last week, he goes, Mom, Teddy's 3. And he said, Mom, he is not going to age well. He is going to be a real jerk as he gets older. He's so spoiled. And I was like, yeah, and that is all my fault. Part of it's the way he came and part of it's the way I've babied
him. Spoiled is how they're supposed to be. You know, it's funny, when we got Mindy, our second Golden, we did get her from a breeder, but I swear we were put in the path of that breeder for a reason, because the breeder was actually a puppy mill hiding. So Mindy had so many health problems that if she would have been with somebody else who didn't have the resources, she probably would have died. She had every parasite and everything you can possibly imagine, which of course, you know, means that our oldest got like Giardia, things like that. We had like a year of hell, and now she's great and wonderful, but I do think it stunted her growth. We tried to do something about the puppy mill, but like they have law enforcement family in a small town here in Colorado. And they had a breeder dog that they were going to ship off to Florida, as they said she was depressed after losing a baby. We ended up taking that dog, and she wasn't depressed. She had a tubal pregnancy and would have died had it not been treated. So I just feel like we were put in the path, but I was supposed to, clearly.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just shocked at the way people can abuse animals. Couldn't even write about that in a book as a serial killer, because I couldn't stomach it.
Isn't it weird? Like, you can escape in a thriller knowing that they're doing horrible things to people, but by God, please don't hurt the dog. Please don't hurt the cat.
When I see that, like on a thriller TV show, I'm like, if they kill the dog, I'm done. We're turning
I'm
it
out.
Off. Yeah. And unfortunately, my husband's like, I'm there with you. I'm there with you. And he likes horror. Like, I mean, he's a horror addict. During the Halloween, he posts little Michael posters all around the house for me to find and complain about and take down.
So what are you working on now?
I do have another thriller I'm working on.
Yay.
Yes, but not officially titled yet, but I'm super excited about it. It's basically about a woman who finds out her fiance is cheating, and then she gets on a plane to go on a work event, like they break up, And she sits next to a woman who she realizes is cheating on her husband. But the woman keeps trying to befriend her, and she just happens to live in the same area that she's staying at, because it's popular Denver area, Cherry Creek. She's like, I want to warn him. No, that's not the way I am. I don't get involved in other people's things. But she's got this torment of, but I was having this happen to me. Doesn't he deserve to know? So, you know, this goes down a rabbit hole that's not good. And nothing is as it seems. So I'm super excited about this one. I think it's probably the funnest experience writing a thriller I've had. So
isn't it fun, even when you've been in it this long, to have a new experience in the writing process?
It is. Cool. I think that's one of the reasons why I went to straight thrillers is, you know, you can only write romance so many ways. Like, how many ways do you write somebody kissing somebody? How many you know, times do you write that same thing? I needed the stimulation of something else. There was a time when I could still find that with romances. Like, I had this story where the character, it was a thriller, and it was connected to that series that went, you know, so crazy. She wakes up with amnesia. And she doesn't, you know, there's enemies around her. But the thing about amnesia that I didn't think about when I went into it is you don't know your favorite food. You don't know the best kiss you ever had. You don't know who's your enemy. And the thing is those sensations of he's the best kiss I ever had, you know, that kind of thing. I love mushrooms. Oh, they're disgusting. Do those things actually come to you despite the amnesia or not? So that was one of the hardest growing experiences as a writer. Yeah. And I swore I would never write amnesia again. But it did make me grow, because I didn't realize how much I lean on those things. Like, that's my favorite thing. Mm-hmm. So it makes you develop the character in other ways. And I think it turned out to be one of the better series I've written, just because it stretched me as a writer. And to this day, it's my assistant's favorite series because of that, I think. So my husband and I walk and listen to audiobooks in spring weather. We love it. So we'll pick a thriller. I don't have time to sit and read. So I'm a gym addict. So I listen at the gym. And so lately it's been all like a Lisa Jewell addiction. If she wrote it, I listen, and I'm always super excited. But I have not listened to her recent one. I can't wait to listen to. I always know I like her books. And I think that's a fun thing when you find an author as a writer yourself who has a knack for making you escape and not think about craft or think about plotting. All you do is think about the story. And Lisa Jewell does that for me.
It's hard to read and not analyze. In audiobooks, I'm an audiobook person and I'm constantly making notes. It's hard to get lost in the book.
Yeah, I think the last one that I liked really a whole lot was The Invisible Girl. I was so obsessed with that one that it actually affected the book I was writing, because I was too obsessed with listening to the book. So when I go to the gym, I plot my books. So I like cardio. You know, it's just like the cardio pain and the story. That's all I have room for. I can't think about the convention. I can't think about other things. And that book, I got so obsessed with it that I wasn't thinking of my story. And I'm like, okay, I have to hurry up and finish her book. I have to think of my story. My husband and I enjoy picking a thriller, and we walk for about 5 miles on Saturday nights. And we listen to either a thriller, or we'll listen to a podcast. Like, we listened to Dr. Death, and we were so obsessed. We wanted to walk more, because the podcast is so much better than the TV show. Oh, that podcast, oh my gosh. I just was like, let's walk longer. I just couldn't believe that was like real life. That was like a thriller beyond any thriller.
Do you have any advice for new writers?
One book does not make a career. I see new authors get obsessed over one book. Write it, get it done, put it under the bed if you have to, and write another. You think that that book is the best thing that's ever been written. I have books that were published with New York publishers that I got the rights back to, so no one will ever read them. That's how much I hate them. And funny thing is, when I talked about that series that went to auction, the first time I talked to my editor who won the auction, she's like, oh, Lisa, I edited your book such and such years ago that was we bought out from that other smaller press. I'm like, oh God, I'm sorry. And no, she went, Lisa, I loved that book. I'm like, oh my God, why did you love it? It's horrible. And she's like, no, it was not. Stop it. You're doing that author thing authors do, where they hate all their old work.
Yeah.
Well, just new authors always think that, you know, what they're writing is brilliant. And it's not. You will grow and change. So write it, move on. If you get a no for it, write another one. It'll be better, I promise. So it's all about just get it done. And to that point, my very first writer's convention I went to as an author, but I wasn't a published author. I stood in this room and they asked, how many of you have written a book? And I thought, well, everybody, because you spent a fortune to come here, right?
Yeah.
Shocked that less than half of the room had actually written a book. So just write the book, you know, and then move on and do it again. Go back to just write, you know.
Yep. Butt and chair, write the book.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Lisa.
Thank you.
To learn more, visit lisareneejones.com.
If you're enjoying The Writing Table, please consider leaving us a review. There are so many podcasts out there. Reviews help other listeners find us. Thanks so much for your support.